Hello, my name is Alan Collins. I'm the partner who heads up the abuse team at Hugh James, and I'm joined by my colleagues Kathleen Hennessy and Danielle Vincent. Hi, Danny. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Alan.
So, thank you for joining us with our latest podcast. As always, with these podcasts, I remind you that the content can be upsetting, disturbing, because we're talking about matters that are inevitably unpleasant, because we're talking about sexual abuse and serious sexual offences and everything that goes with it. So, understandably, it can be upsetting. So, if you think you're going to be troubled by this latest podcast, now's the time to switch off and go and do something else. Otherwise, please do stay with us. In this podcast, we're going to be discussing the Sarah Everard case. That's the dreadful case of Sarah Everard and the offender, former police officer Wayne Cousins. So we're going to be discussing not so much the ins and outs of what happened, because that's not really necessary, but we are going to be looking at how it was that Cousins became a police officer and remained a police officer. And of course, he's not an isolated case, sadly. There are other rogue police officers who have committed horrendous crimes, and it beggars belief how they became policemen, let alone remained as police officers. So that's what we're going to be looking at today. So I'm going to hand over to Kathleen, who can give us a bit of background as to what we're going to be actually discussing, which is all around how was it that Cousins became a police officer, remained a police officer. And I'm sure between the three of us, we'll also touch upon other dreadful cases where the same issues have arisen, which poses a question: how is it in 2024 that we have this dreadful state of affairs? So over to you, Kathleen.
Thanks, Alan. So this has kind of all been prompted by the most recent BBC documentary about Sarah Everard, and then also lots of press around the independent review that's being conducted by Lady Eilish into the Sarah Everard case, and exactly what you say, Alan, how Wayne Cousins became a police officer. So I actually watched the documentary last night. And one of the things that I just want to mention, because it was really surprising to me, and I don't remember ever knowing about that before, was that he actually arrested her. And that was how he was able to get her into his car. I don't know. Is that something that you guys were aware of?
I think towards the end of the press, I think that became more apparent that that was the suggestion of how he got her, away from, walking down the street.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it seems that he, because it was lockdown, he, arrested her for, I don't know, breaking lockdown rules and handcuffed her and put her in his car. So, and used his warrant card, flashing his badge, so to speak. So I just was shocked by that in terms of all the more direct link to his role as a police officer and obviously what happened to her. But the thing that's been made clear by Lady Angiolini's review is that there were allegations against him for decades, including before he joined the force, and how, if those things had been taken seriously, either A, not letting him join the force, or B, when there were allegations made against him, that they were properly investigated, then the possibility is certainly that Sarah would still be alive.
Yes, and of course, we know from other inquiries, looking into how it was that he became a police officer and remained a police officer, that it's quite clear that the College of Policing has guidance on minimum standards. But of course, it's only guidance, and police forces up and down the land can follow guidance, but they're doing it perhaps in their own way. There's no legal yardstick to vet by, so to speak. And what we have seen from these inquiries is that police officers have been recruited with criminal records, or they've had allegations made against them, and they've been given the benefit of the doubt, or what they are supposed to have done has been minimized in some way. And of course, in this day and age, we've got social media as well. And I think it's been seen that, you know, some officers perhaps should not have been recruited in the first place because of what they've posted, perhaps on social media and so on. And I think because there isn't this minimum legal standard, you get variation and you get, as I said, people being given the benefit of the doubt and recruited when objectively, if someone has stood back, would have said, well, actually, no, this person isn't really suitable to be a police officer.
Yeah.
And it was also seen that references weren't taken up, again, which you think is a would think is a sort of glaring failure. Mm-hmm. And of course, once someone has been recruited, they're recruited. But people do change. You know, a 40-year-old may be a very different person to what he or she was when they were 20. And of course, one has to recognize that being a police officer is a role that is privileged in many ways. It has great responsibilities with it, but also comes stresses and strains. And it would not be unsurprising if the stresses and strains of the job changes someone over time. Not that that makes any kind of excuse, but the point is, what I'm saying is that a 40-year-old could be a very different person to when they were 20. And that brings me on to cousins again and other officers. Why weren't they rigorously monitored and re-vetted periodically during their careers?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, you make a really good point about, you know, who you are when you're 20, when you join the first force can be different of the person you are 20 years later when you're 40. I think the thing with Cousins, though, is that even before he joined the force, there were allegations that he had sexually assaulted a young girl. And you have to question, how is it even possible that he was even able to then join the police force at all? But then that, you know, there were then these multiple allegations against him of indecent exposure that seemed to have been, they weren't properly investigated. And, you know, those are considered kind of an escalation in terms of sexual offenses that then do lead to contact offending. So, you know, I think that's concerning. And we're talking about multiple police forces here. It's not just the Met, Kent, CNC, the Civil Nuclear Constabulary, and the Met, who had these reports about him. And over years, 2015, 2020, and then only a few days before Sarah was kidnapped and murdered. So there's clearly really significant issues. I think one of the things that was surprising to me in the documentary was that the officers who were conducting the investigation into Sarah's disappearance, when they found out that Wayne Cousins, they identified Cousins first and were on their way to interview him and arrest him, then discovered that he was a serving police officer, and they were all shocked. And it really struck me when I was thinking about it afterwards, why were they shocked?
Yeah,
just because someone's a police officer doesn't mean that they can't be a sexual predator, a murderer. They could be all sorts of things. Mm. So I just thought that kind of showed a bit of naivety that was also troubling, you know, that you have to be able to kind of recognize what's within your own midst as well, I think.
Is it naivety or is it culture?
Well, yeah, maybe both, or maybe culture. I don't know, you know.
Mm.
I mean, culture is clearly an issue, and that's been highlighted in Lady Ellish's report, certainly. But I know one of the things that she recommends is a better vetting, as you were saying, Alan, you know, that there kind of should be repeated vetting of people because, you know, you're different when you're 40 than you were when you were 20. But that better vetting could include in-person interviews and home visits. But that to me just didn't even seem sufficient. You know, I don't know what other vetting also takes place, but as you were saying, you know, kind of a deep dive into someone's social media, what they discovered about Wayne Cousins was that he was addicted to extreme and violent pornography, which is, you know, as we know, an indicator for people to go on and sexually offend and sexually abuse. So I feel like it needs to be much more in depth. And I also wondered whether there should be psychological assessments of police officers or candidates before allowing them to join the force.
Well, that's a good point because, you know, police officers do get exposed to terrible events, matters, and so on. And it's bound to have an impact. As we all go through life, we get, you know, scars on our back, so to speak, from, you know, from just life, you know. But, you know, if you're exposed to a lot of, you know, really unpleasant stuff that, you know, it is going to make a mark, but one hopes it, you know, is dealt with in a rational way and not a damaging way. But again, you know, that should be looked at. Maybe, you know, periodically officers should be psychologically tested to make sure that everything is okay. It must be worth doing, because the way the police are going on at the moment with these terrible cases, it's doing enormous damage, not just to the victims, of course, you know, to say the obvious, but to the reputation of the forces, you know, their standing with the general public, and of course the effect on the officers themselves and their colleagues and so on. You know, the price must be enormous in human terms, you know, when someone like Cousins is able to do what they do.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Well, as Kathleen mentions, you know, this idea of looking into people's media and social history and things like that, that's done in other organizations. I know specifically with regards to people when they apply for GCHQ, there's a huge vetting process that can take up to a year. You know, the individual's family are looked at, if there's any criminal history, lots of things like that. But also very much so, you know, are there any skeletons in the closet there? And regarding, you know, this particular case, I'm sure his social media would have been fraught with, you know, red flags here.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's a really good point, Dan, actually. And, you know, I mean, the Lady Ellis is saying that his crimes sit on the same continuum, as she put it, as sexist and misogynist behavior within police culture. And I think you're absolutely right in terms of there would be stuff likely on his social media, and I'm sure lots of other officers who are still serving, that would be sexist and misogynistic. And that probably all needs to be looked at and rooted out to avoid this type of tragedy again.
Exactly. Well, it's going to be down to the politicians to take a lead on this, because these problems have been sort of circulating for quite some time now. And I may be completely wrong, I can see no lead being taken to establish a legal minimum standard for recruiting, vetting, monitoring, you know, what we've been talking about. And it's down to government and the politicians to say, right, there needs to be a law that says this is what each force must do, and it's not optional.
No, absolutely. And I think, I mean, James cleverly announced yesterday that they're going to be taking a number of measures in response to the report, including the automatic suspension of officers charged with certain offenses, which, again, all sounds well and good, except we're talking about charged. And the problem with Wayne Cousins and David Carrick, the other Met police officer who was jailed for dozens of rapes and sexual offenses against 12 women last year, there were reports, but they were never investigated. So it never would have gotten to the point of charging. So that doesn't seem that it's going to help at all.
No, and it's after the event, isn't it? It's trying to prevent all this harm being caused in the first place.
It reminds me a bit of the proposed mandatory reporting clause, a suspension after they're charged. Well, you know, they were never charged to begin with.
No, that's right. You know, it's a plaster job, isn't it? You know, it's I suppose it's better than nothing, but it's missing the point.
That's exactly right. You just hit the nail on the head. It is missing the point entirely. And
I just don't get it, why these politicians, you know, it's a sort of open goal as to what they need to do, and they just don't get on and do it. Yeah. I think it's just generally, I've met the Home Secretary and a couple of weeks ago, and that was on the victims bill in Parliament and the provision that sort of excludes accountability. I'm sure he'll forgive me if I've got this wrong, but I came away with the impression that he didn't realise that accountability was missing. But, you know, anyway, that's by the by. If you start me on that, we'll be here all day. So anyway, so the point is, isn't it, that to prevent more Wayne Cousins and David Carricks and the like, there needs to be a legal standard for vetting that all police forces must adhere to.
Yes, absolutely. I think there's obviously clearly a lot of work to be done here. I mean, it seems to me like it's a complete overhaul that needs to happen of the process going forward, but also they need to really be taking a look at all of their officers now, their serving officers, what, you know, what they're up to.
Well, and I also hope, of course, that the victims have been told that they have legal rights.
Yeah.
You know, they've been sexually assaulted, harmed by these rogue police officers. They are entitled to look to accountability, not simply, and that doesn't simply stop when the offender gets sentenced and sent to prison, because they've got to pick up the pieces and try and rebuild their lives. So yeah. All victims of sexual abuse under the Victims Code are supposed to be told that. Very often they're not, but under the Victims Code, victims of sexual offences and any offence are supposed to be told about their rights to achieve accountability, for example, compensation, to compensate them for the damage that they have suffered, and that they should go and get specialist legal advice.
Yeah, absolutely.
So on that note, thank you very much for listening. Please do join us for our next podcast. And it just remains for me to say thanks and goodbye. And it's goodbye from Danny, and it's goodbye from Kathleen.
Bye, everyone. Thank you.